Okay, I'm calling the Environment Policy and Oversight Committee to order. First thing, thanks for those who braved the storm. Looks like things are getting better out there right now, but first thing we need to do, we have two meetings that we have to do the minutes for, both February 17th and February 24th. And they're in your packet. Representative Anderson, would you like to move the minutes, please?
Yes, Mr. Chair, I certainly would.
Thank you. Representative Anderson moves the minutes for the meetings of February 17th and 24th. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Motion is approved and minutes are adopted. Today we are going to be hearing the Green Acres Bill, Representative Faust's bill. There are actually two Green Acres bills that are currently moving. One was sent out of Agriculture Finance to the Tax Committee, and that was a repealer. This one modifies and changes some of the provisions in the Green Acres law that passed last year. And Representative Faust is here to present the bill. And I will move the bill. I'll move House File 217 be recommended to pass and referred to the Committee on Finance with recommendation that it be sent from there to Environment Finance. Representative Faust, if you would like to present the bill.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair, and I think what I'll do is I'll turn it over to the House staff, first of all, and let them go through it, and then I'll talk about what some of the things that maybe they don't cover, some of the implications that they don't cover. So then I'll turn it over to Karen Baker, Steve Hines, whoever wants to talk about it. And
okay.
Mr. Chair?
Yes, Representative Gardner.
Maybe you could just give us the short and sweet explanation for the purpose of this bill on this committee as opposed to property taxes or ag or anything like that.
Sure. Well, thank you. Yes, we are hearing it here because it does have environmental components, although this is an ag bill. It's an ag program, and it did go to ag finance. First, Representative Junkies, Chair Junkies Committee. And we are going to focus our attention on the issues pertaining to the conservation acres and those open acres, or as some have called them, the non-productive acres that are not actually tilled. And that is included in Representative Faust's bill. So that will be the focal point of our committee. But it is important to point out, as you did, Representative Gardner, that this is an agricultural bill. And let's see, first we want to start off with the staff, so Ms. Baker and Mr. Hines, whoever would like to start first.
Yes, Mr. Chair, Steve Hines with House Research, and we were going to start by, if the committee desires us, we were going to present a little quick background just on the Green Acres program first, and then go into the summary of the bill.
That would be great. Thank you.
And the part I'm going to talk about just a little bit of the sort of longer perspective background of the program and some of the summary of the report that many of you are aware of that was done by the Legislative Audit Commission. So I'm not part of the Legislative Audit Commission, but I'm going to summarize their work very quickly. And then Tara's going to kind of bring it up there, more what happened in last year's session. The Green Acres program started in the late 60s, and it's actually formally called the Minnesota Agricultural Property Tax Law. The law reduces taxes on certain agricultural land through a mechanism that's somewhat unique in Minnesota property tax law, in that it instructs the assessor that for property that's enrolled in the program that it should, the assessor should value the land as if it did not have any economic factors on it other than its agricultural factors or its agricultural value. So normally the standard in Minnesota is that property is assessed at its highest and best use, what the assessor thinks it would sell for on the open market. But in the case of this one program, the assessor is instructed to ignore any parts of the market value that are due to factors other than agricultural, which is kind of an abstract concept in some ways, and like I said, a unique program in Minnesota's property tax system. The idea is that farmers enroll in the program and their land continues to be taxed at this lower rate. In addition, another major benefit of the program is that they're also exempt from special assessments during the time they're enrolled in the program. And then at the when they sell the land, or I shouldn't even say when, it's really when the land changes use from agricultural to a different use. At that time is when it becomes taken out of the program, and 3 years of back, this is the law prior to 2008 now, three years of back taxes are due, and the deferred special assessments are due at that point. The Legislative Audit Commission study concluded that the overall tax benefit to enrolled properties from Green Acres is about $35 million as of 2007. And this tax that's not paid by the enrollees in the program is shifted to the neighboring taxpayers to the tune of that same $35 million. And in fact, the Audit Commission reports also said that the dollar amount would be $55 million, but for another law that we have called the Limited Market Value Law, which is a further limitation on how property values can grow, that's expiring as of this year. So there's sort of two numbers floating around. You might hear about $35 and $55 million. That's the reason for the difference. Other elements of the study that the Legislative Audit Commission did concluded that the Green Acres of programs, there's some discussion, there's not a clear statement in statute as to what the purpose of the Green Acres program is. The only statement in law refers to, just talks about inequities in the way property taxes are treated, or property taxes are spread on these kinds of properties, but it really doesn't go further than that. Lots of people read into it a desire to preserve farmland, but that is not specifically stated in the bill. The Audit Commission concluded that the Green Acres program's effects on preserving farmland are of short duration. There's no long-term commitment to the land. The three-year payback is sort of the only obstacle to selling it to development, and that's seen as not a very major obstacle. Other findings that they had, as they said, the program's effect on preserving farmland is short and tenuous. It is unclear whether the Green Acres program's goals include benefiting some owners on types of land, such as untillable land used mostly for hunting. Certain Green Acres program eligibility criteria, including the income threshold and the definition of land that is primarily agricultural, are outdated, difficult to implement fairly, or create inequities. Among their recommendations were that the legislature should clarify who and what types of properties should benefit from the Green Acres program, that the legislature should replace the minimum income criterion with more specific language to help define land that is primarily agricultural, the Department of Revenue should continue efforts to make the Green Acres program more consistent statewide, but also make some changes, such as to its method for valuing non-tillable land in the program. Then another direct quote, if Minnesota wishes to preserve land for agricultural uses over the long term, the legislature should consider supplementing existing programs with other strategies. And just a few other little highlights of their summary, the executive summary really. Among beneficiaries of the Green Acres program are people who are not farmers, land with only a small proportion of productive acres, farmland with increased values due to recreational demand, and minimal acreages used largely for hobby farm purposes. The legislature should clarify the types of land to benefit. With that, that sort of sets the tone, I think, for then the 2008 session.
Okay. For the record, my name is Karen Baker. What I'd like to do is just make a few comments on what happened in 2008. And the letter that you have in front of you, it's a memo that Steve and I wrote back in September, and we wrote it in response to a lot of questions that were coming and a lot of misinformation that was out there. And this letter went to, was distributed to a lot of members and a lot of taxpayers. First of all, two important points, and I think at the bottom of that first page you can see two things that I'd like to highlight, and then I want to talk about just a few basic changes that really were made in the 2008 bill. But one of them is that if a landowner decides to leave his or her land in the program, there's no change in property taxes as a result of it. There could be impact, obviously, in the future when the property is sold, depending on when or the nature of that land that's being taken out. So that's where the 3 versus 7 year paybacks come in, and we'll talk about that in a minute. But the second thing is that none of the changes were effective for property taxes payable in 2009. All of these changes really took effect, are taking effect for pay 2010. But taxpayers do have to make a decision. And I'll also mention a little bit later as far as the timing of that decision. But on the second page, it highlights the 4 primary changes. And I think in pre-2008, we really had one class of property that was ag. And the 2008 bill, what it did is it separated that ag class into 2A and 2B, and 2A was the productive, and 2B was what we're calling rural vacant land. Both of those have the same class rate, so from a property tax standpoint, there's no property tax difference. And it's also important to keep in mind that all of the changes that we're talking about in Green Acres only affected the non-productive or this class 2B property. They did not affect the productive. So that was one of the things. And from a standpoint of, we did not specifically define productive versus non-productive. There is some language in statutes, but there's some. But the idea was the productive land is the tilled, the mowed for hay, the pastured, the fallowed land. Whereas your non-productive is more the woods, waste, meadows. And when we say non-productive, it's really non-productive from an ag production standpoint. And that's where I know that you have some concerns from an environmental, but it was more looking at ag production. The second real change was that by doing this rural vacant land class, that classification will no longer be allowed in the Green Acres program for future enrollments. So by separating out that 2A and 2B, the idea was that land that is classified 2B would still be left in the property that is 2B that's enrolled right now in Green Acres can be left in Green Acres, but future enrollments would not allow it to come into on future programs or on future enrollments. This is true for all the land that's in government-sponsored conservation programs like the RIM and the CREPFN programs. And then land that's currently enrolled is grandfathered as long as it stays under current ownership. And there's a couple provisions, there are a couple exceptions. First of all, when land that's classified as rural vacant land is removed from the program, it's subject to a 7-year payback as compared to the 3-year, because it's always been under a 3-year payback. And then in the future, landowners will no longer be permitted to withdraw just small tracts of rural land, so that they can't just piecemeal out, you know, 2 acres or 5 acres. Or, they can withdraw just a portion of it prior to this January 2nd date. Another provision, though, with the grandfather provision was also adopted so that taxpayers could remove some or all of their land from Green Acres program in 2009 before the major components of the reform were fully implemented, and just be subject to that 3-year payback under the old law rather than any new 7-year payback. This was basically to allow owners who anticipated selling or transferring any of their rural vacant land in the near future to be able to do so and not have any higher payback than just the 3 years. One of the things that came up, and I think if you turn to the very last page of that handout, was that when revenue started implementing this and working with assessors, they realized, and with taxpayers and all the confusion, they realized that there was a lot of administrative work that needed to be done, as well as just communication that needed to be done. And so they sent out this letter, and you can see it was dated back in September, and basically it gave this timeline, and it said that counties would send letters to taxpayers that were currently enrolled, telling them about the options for their productive and non-productive lands. Then in January of 2009, taxpayers only had to indicate their intent to the county assessor's office in writing of a desire to withdraw any land from Green Acres, and this was just an intent, so it wasn't a binding thing. And then sometime in this summer of 2009, the deferred taxes and payback would be calculated by the assessor, so that would give the assessor time to look at what the various parcels were that taxpayers said they may want to withdraw, and they could figure out what those values, what the taxes would be, and they could notify the taxpayers, and then this summer notify them, and they could make their final decisions, and nothing would be have to be paid until in November of 2009. So this timeline was designed to give taxpayers more time, as well as with the assessors, and it was felt that it was needed by assessors in order to do all of the various steps that were necessary. With that, I don't know if there's any.
Representative Hackbarth has a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Ms. Baker, I know one of the issues was with the current law that we just passed, and you touched on it a little bit. The grant, if you're enrolled now, you're going to be grandfathered in under this bill. But say there's an easement or something that needs to be sold, and there's going to be a change in the deed for the easement, maybe a road going by, something like that, that has to be sold to the county for a road easement. Did we fix that issue in here so that that can take place without interfering with the grandfathering? You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
Because under the current law, it was speculated that any kind of change whatsoever in the deed, you would then be subject to the 7-year payback.
Mr. Chairman, Representative, I guess two different things. One is that the whole issue of transfers has come up as one of the issues which has been addressed in several of the bills, including this one. I think under current law, prior to these changes, if in fact that happened where an easement was necessary because of like a roadway, back taxes of the 3 years would have to be paid. So that really was never specified in law, but from what I could tell and when I talked to the department as well as counties, I think the taxpayers were paying that, and it was part of a negotiated agreement of if I'm going to sell, 5 acres of land because of its road access, and I know I have to pay these taxes, that was kind of part of the negotiated deal, and depending on who pays it, but that's still part of a negotiated sale price. So I don't think that particular thing was changed. What the bigger issue is if you transferred it to somebody other than a spouse. And the department did send out a letter not very long ago, in February 12th of 2009, as a matter of fact, on Green Acre transfers that occur between spouses. And they basically told assessors that when there's like death of a property owner and a surviving spouse retains ownership, or when you've got a divorce or a marriage or any of that kind of situation, that does not trigger the additional taxes. And so those issues were dealt with, or are being dealt with by the department. But if you wanted to transfer it to your son or daughter or other relative, or none of those issues were dealt with, and the bills that have been introduced deal with that in a variety of ways. So, and the issue you're talking about, like with the roadway, that has not really specifically been addressed in any of them. But, you know, if in fact the legislature doesn't want additional taxes to be paid in those kind of instances, we should actually have statutory language that says that that is specifically exempted, because it's never been in statute that that should be specifically exempted.
Okay. Representative Hackbarth.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. And the point I'm trying to make is I'm not saying that the taxes aren't due for the three-year payback that they've always been due for, but do they go to the seven-year payback under this bill? I mean, because it's going to be subject to seven-year payback should the land go back to somebody else. It's going to be subject to seven-year payback.
I believe that would be for the 2B lands, the so-called non-productive lands. So would that be the case, Ms. Baker?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Hackbarth, we could ask the department that question, but I think what they would say is that for land that is taken over by, like, the DOT or in that kind of a taking, I think they would let that land be taken out and not subject to the 7 years. I think that probably would be subject to three. But again, you know, I think some of those things probably should be specified or known how we want to deal with that and maybe put in statute.
I agree. Mr. Chairman.
Representative Hackbarth.
What I'm also wondering is if that does happen then, is the rest of the property still grandfathered in, or does that change? The rest of the property still remains the same? Because I think that was part of some of the questions that some of my constituents were asking.
And there,
under current law.
There was a minimal amount that could be sold before it would, or transferred before it would trigger all of the acres having to be taken off of Green Acres.
Yeah.
Is that
okay?
Are you talking about new Green Acres land or stuff that's already in? Should the title change? Okay.
Mr. Chairman, Representative, I think that dealing with land that's currently in there, I think that would probably be allowable to come out under the 3-year payback under current law.
And the rest of it
stands? And the rest of it would stand, yeah. I don't think that that would be a problem.
Okay.
But again, you know, given all the changes now that we've occurred, that have transpired, I think we probably would be wise in specifying that type of transaction.
And Mr. Chairman, that's exactly my point. Like, we do have to clarify. I know this is in the tax committee, and I think that's where this should probably take place. But I do think that needs to be clarified, because that's really a problem with my constituents that I've been hearing from my constituents.
Okay.
This needs to be clarified. Should this bill that moves forward?
Yeah, if we could get information on that would be very helpful. Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Ms. Baker and Mr. Hensley. You've been dealing with Green Acres issues for a while, and days in, days out for a couple of years here. And I'm asking for your opinion on what you believe people believe is the public purpose of Green Acres legislation.
And I do know you said that that wasn't really spelled out, the actual intent of the legislation in the language itself, or could you comment on that? I know you had already commented that it wasn't really a clear goal that was laid out to begin with. Mr. Hines?
Mr. Chair, speaking for myself, I guess, I mean, I would have to say that I think it is ambiguous. You know, some people have asserted that was a desire to preserve ag land, but that is not stated, and I don't know that you could necessarily conclude that. There were not mechanisms set up in place for trying to keep track of how much ag land there was, how much was lost. If you thought, I think I would argue if there was a really a firm desire to really preserve land for its land sake, for ag land sake, you might have envisioned a more elaborate process where you really tried to monitor things and tried to make sure, and that really wasn't done. And so my thinking is that the legislature at the time really was trying to just provide a way for farmers to hold on to this land and not have to sell under pressure. But that's my personal feeling. And
Mr. Chairman, Representative Hansen, I guess I would just add one thing to Steve's, and that is if the purpose was just to preserve ag land, I think it would have been nice if they would have gone one step further and put like a covenant type of thing in, like they did with the ag preserve language under 473H. That particular program has a lot more teeth in it and a lot more preservation of that you have to keep it in these programs. But issues did not come up on the Green Acres until over these past, probably 5, 6, 7 years, they've really started heightening. And a lot of it's because of recreational land. Because prior to that, it was more of just the urban sprawl kind of issue. And now it's really mushroomed into much more of an issue with the hunting land and the seasonal rec land that people are purchasing. And it's kind of ag land because it's brush and swamp and trees, and you know, but it really is not productive ag land, and that has been a concern as to whether or not that should be able to be in Green Acres. And so that's where the real issues have really started to emerge on the Green Acres program, and then with the department and the uniformity and other things, but the hunting and recreational land has really brought it to a head.
Representative Hansen.
To follow up, Mr. Chair, that if the ag land is tied in with, let's just call, instead of rural vacant land, let's call it conservation land, trees, buffers, wetlands, etc., that are part of a tract, a 40-acre tract, and 5 acres is trees. I think you'd mentioned earlier that the report or the auditor's report had said that the program, if the intent was, or if it was implied that protecting ag land, which could include conservation land, it wasn't effective, that the land would still get developed even with the program eventually. Is that your understanding?
Mr. Chair, Representative Hansen, I guess I'd like to point out just one sentence that we put in 2008 to address some of that, and that is in Class 2A, the definition says Class 2A property may contain property that would otherwise be classified as 2B, including but not limited to sloughs, wooded wind shelters, acreage abutting ditches, and other similar land impractical for the assessor to value separately from the rest of the property. There was a lot of discussion as to how that language should read and whether or not it should have percentages, that it can't be a higher, you know, if you had a 40-acre tract, what happens if you had 5 acres of this and 35 of productive? Well, that seemed great, but what happens if you had 40 acres and 30 acres was this? You know, then, you know, what is impractical to separate, and, you know, are you, how do you start measuring that? And the Department of Revenue is trying to deal with this to give assessors guidelines on this particular thing, but that has raised a lot of concern, and we put this in precisely for that reason.
Maybe I can make one other point on conservation lands is that prior to 2008, the crop and rimlands were allowed to be in Green Acres because they were allowed to be classified as agricultural, and there was nothing that prohibited them from being in Green Acres. And I know part of the rationale, or maybe all the rationale for that, was that to get into those programs, the land had to be agricultural prior to going in. So the idea was that the person kind of forewent the income they might get off the ag land to put in these preserve programs, and therefore was still entitled to some of the benefits that we give to agricultural property, including green acres. And that was the philosophy going into the 2008 reform. But part of what happened in 2008 was that was stricken, and all of a sudden it went the opposite way on that. That was no longer, but prior to 2008, that was another sort of conservation piece of the green acres program.
Okay. And Representative Wagenius has a question.
Yes, thank you. Ms. Baker, you mentioned that there was an ag program that involved a covenant. Can you just tell us just a couple sentences about that?
Ms. Baker.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Wagenius, there is a separate chapter of statute, I believe it's 473H, it's called the Metro Ag Preserve Act. And in addition to the metro counties, there are a few non-metro counties that are in. I think there's three counties. It's counties that start with W, Watonwan, Wabasha, and Winona. And I'm not exactly sure why it's those three, but it dates back quite a ways. And what the Metro Ag Preserve Act does is in order to get into it, you have to have at least 40 acres. So it has a minimum of 40 acres. It also has got to be approved by the local government. They have to agree to that, and the reason for that is because of planning, so that somebody doesn't get into that and cause problems because of extending sewer systems and roads and ditches and drainage and everything. And so the local government has to approve it. And what it does is it treats the property in the same way as green acres. So you're taxed at the ag value. You also get a credit, and I can't exactly remember how the credit is computed. I haven't looked at it for a little while, but it is an actual credit. And the credit comes from the mortgage. There's an additional $5 mortgage tax that is paid in the metro area that funds this program, and it's done by the Metro Council, and in fact the Metro Council actually does a report on this every year. And then one other important feature of this is that all special assessments are prohibited. And that gets us back to why local governments need to approve these areas, because if they're going to run a sewer line out, they don't want to approve somebody being in this program if, in fact, it means they can't charge any of the special assessment costs. But these people have a stronger commitment. One issue that's been raised a number of times with that program, however, is it is an eight-year covenant. But you can get out of it. You can, at the end of, say, 7 years, if you want to, you can, or what you can do is go into the program, and that same day, you can set the clock running for you to get out 8 years later. And if in 8 years you decide you don't want to get out, you can just go right back in. So there's no prohibition to you kind of playing games to some degree. If you really are on an urban fringe and are thinking maybe you want to sell your land and you're not sure exactly when development is going to come, you can get right back in, but you have to be back in for 8 years. But that's been one of the criticisms, I think, of the program, is that people should decide one way or the other. Because if you really are trying to preserve ag land, that's, you know, maybe not necessarily the right way to go.
And we're going to be moving on to talk about the bill next then, and did a nice job presenting as far as why it was there, when it was put in place, what the reforms were last year, and I guess the reforms were put in place to try to address some of the abuses some may have seen in the program, where people were receiving benefits that were not actively farming the land. There were some issues that were brought up as a result of those reforms, and Representative Faust has a bill that addresses those issues. So, Representative Faust, if you'd like to present the bill and a little bit about what the issues are that you're addressing here.
All right. Thank you very much, Mr. Chair. And you're absolutely right. There were a lot of issues that came up from the hearings. That, I mean, all of us have probably heard about the problems that the new Green Acres Law has created. So what my bill does is it's basically broken into two parts. One is it sets up a true grandfather clause for all the lands that's currently in the program. So it changes the 7-year payback back to the 3-year payback. You can take out, and this was the question Representative Hackbarth was asking, you can take out any part of it. If you've got 80 acres in there and you want to sell 5 acres to your son or somebody you've never met before, you can do that without paying the back tax on the whole thing. So that's an important thing. And another important thing is the grandfather clause is actually on the land instead of the owner, so that they can sell to anybody, and the new person will automatically be in Green Acres as long as they continue to keep it in the agriculture production state that's currently in. And so this means that the 2B land will stay in without any changes going forward, basically, is what this is doing. So if somebody is in it now and they're concerned because they've got a lot of land that is rural vacant, it doesn't impact them at all. It stays exactly the same as what it has been. The second part of what this bill does is it sets up what's been referred to as Green Acres 2. So that a year from now, if somebody wants to sign up to set up the new rules for anybody that wants to put any new land into Green Acres. One of the things that it does is it has to be homesteaded land. It also has to produce at least $1,000, or normally would produce $1,000 of some product a year. So it could be $1,000 worth of corn or hay or whatever it is, but it has to produce at least $1,000 worth of something a year, at least on a normal basis. There has been some concern comes up if somebody plants a bunch of evergreen trees out there to sell as Christmas trees, does that still qualify? And when we've looked through this, we believe that it would. Some people have asked us to clarify that just to make sure, and that's one of the things that if we feel we need to do that, we will do that. But we believe that right now it would still be fine. Another issue that's come up is CRP and rimland. All of that will qualify, but it has to be part of the homestead. One of the issues that somebody had that insisted, you know, that forced some of the changes was people that bought, you know, 80 acres of land, put it in CRP, and there was no agriculture going on there. It was just hunting land. That's all it was. And so if it isn't homesteaded, and in that situation, it wouldn't qualify anymore. They couldn't put any new land in, let's put it that way. The one last thing I'll mention is that the 2B land and 2A land, the productive land and the non-productive land, if they're going to put in their homestead, it has to be at least 50% productive land. Or they can only put in as much non-productive land as they have productive land on that farm. So in a nutshell, I think that covers most of it. I will just briefly talk about the impact that I think this has on environment and why I think it's important that you look at this. One of the problems.
Just one question, Representative Faust. As far as the conservation acres, you said that they do qualify, but they would still be counted as part of the 2B land. Is that correct? It would be in that.
My opinion is that it would count as part of the 2A land.
It would count as part of the 2A. Okay. Thank you.
Is that right?
Okay, I'm going to be corrected on that. It could only be up to 50%, so it counts as a 2B land.
Okay, thank you.
If they work it up, then it would be 2A land, I guess. Okay, where it gets into the environmental issues is that under the current law, the one that was set up last year, there becomes an incentive for farmers or landowners to work up shelter belts and drain sloughs and that type of thing, which from an environmental standpoint, I don't think we want to encourage that to happen. In my area, for example, hunting land sells for 2 or 3 times as much as farmland. And so if somebody's got a slough, 80-acre slough or 40-acre slough, which is not uncommon in my area, they're paying 2 or 3 times the tax on that than they are the farmland right next to it because it's considered hunting land. And so, or if they have abandoned land that has just grown back to trees, it's worth 2 or 3 times as much as the farmland next to it. And so I don't think, from my opinion is, from an environmental standpoint, we would like to leave those groves of trees and we would like to leave those sloughs there because, you know, there's a lot of environmental advantages to doing that. And so I don't think we want to put a tax incentive for the landowners to work up the land, to work up the sloughs or drain the sloughs or cut down all their groves of trees. So I think that's a big part of the environmental impact that this bill has.
Thank you, Representative Fowler. Ms. Baker.
Mr. Chairman, on page 4 of the bill, I think the lines 4.12 through 4.20 is important of, and Representative Faust alluded to that, is that's the language where we tried to get to the farm unit more, so that we added language that says Class 2A may include property that is not directly involved in egg production. That's new language. Including but not limited to, and then we left the line of the sloughs and wind shelters and everything. And then we said that's interspersed with productive ag land such that it'd be impractical for the property to be sold separately, and therefore impractical for the assessor to value separately. And that was language which we tried to make it more of the farm kind of unit issue that was raised by the Ag Committee and by Representative Dunkey and some of the discussion to try and get at that unit.
Okay. Any questions for Representative McNamara?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative Faust, for bringing the bill forward. My question centers around, Representative Faust, did you say that if someone owned, like, say, an 80 and it was in CRP and they no longer homesteaded it, but it is in the CRP program, would that qualify currently, and would they be grandfathered in because it is in CRP now and they were in Green Acres before the 08?
Representative Faust.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative. Yes, if they're currently in it, it stays in as long as they want to keep it in. It's not a problem. In that same situation, though, 2 years from now, under these rules, they would not be able to put it in if it's not homesteaded.
Representative McNamara.
And Representative Faust, if I can just follow up. When you say if they were in, I'm talking prior to the 08 bill they were in, and is that the way you're saying?
That is correct. That is absolutely correct, yes.
And so one more clarification. So is basically, Representative Faust, anybody that is in the program before the bill passed in 08 would still be able to be in it, and the property would stay in it, because some CRP program, 15-year maybe, and they planted it with trees and it's rolling terrain, we wouldn't make them at the end if the CRP ended and they didn't re-enroll it and just let the trees grow. They weren't in that program anymore. Would the land still qualify?
Yes, as long as it was in prior to the change of 2008, they can leave it in as long as they like. I mean, if they sell it to a strip mall, obviously, and you know, it's developed, obviously, it doesn't qualify anymore. But as long as it doesn't change what they're doing with it, that's fine.
To that point, would it be a 3-year payback for him because it was in, as opposed to the 7-year?
Yes,
it would be a 3-year payback.
Representative Anderson has a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My question pertains to a tree farm type of thing, or a Christmas tree farm that, as you mentioned, may take 7 years to produce a tree to sell to give you that $1,000 of income. But are we talking $1,000 of income each year, or just 1 year to qualify for Green Acres?
The language is on the first page on line 1.11 and 1.12. Actually 1.10 through 1.12, and what it says is, and produced or normally would have produced 1,000 agriculture products in the previous year. So it's on a per year basis, and it's $1,000, and the key word there is normally would have.
So if it takes 7 years to produce a Christmas tree to sell, how does that fit into this then? If they didn't have any income for 7 years, for example.
Right. Okay. My interpretation of that is that if at the time they put it into Christmas trees, they had been producing $1,000 a year up to that point, that it would qualify.
Okay. So, Representative
Faust, I'm wondering if maybe, is it going to Representative Wagenius' committee at some point?
Yes.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Faust, maybe if we could work with you with an amendment, because that is of concern for me, that's going to leave it up to local assessors' interpretation, that the average income will be that when averaged out, because a lot of tree production is from a 5 to a 10 year lead time where there would clearly be no income. So maybe we can work on an amendment that says average is something to clarify, because we want to encourage things like tree farms.
Right. If I can, I would have no problem with that at all, because, I mean, that certainly is my intent in the bill to allow that to happen.
Okay. Representative Jaskowski. Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Faust, kind of along that timeline, I mean, if you've got stand of trees that is, we've got a lot of it down in southeast Minnesota that the stands may take 60 or 80 years before you're going to harvest them. Would they as well qualify the same way, and could you provide the same, I mean, you know, an acre of walnuts or an acre of red oak is, I would guess, is very easily going to meet that $1,000 per acre on average over the lifetimes of those trees, but certainly not, maybe in the first 5 or 10 years. Representative Faust.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative. On page 6.2, number 7, says trees grown for sale as a crop is included in there, but the $1,000 might hook them on that as well. So I think that we might want to, you know, make sure that we write that to include that as well in that amendment.
Mr.
Okay.
Mr.
And
Chair.
Ms. Baker.
Just so the committee understands, there's two different issues going on here. One is the classification of whether or not it's ag or not, and then secondly, does it qualify for green acres? And what Representative Faust just said is there's no question that it qualifies for ag, because what he pointed out on page 6 is 6.20 is that it really is an ag qualification under that 7. So the issue is to clarify or to make sure that under the $1,000 per year that it doesn't then fall out.
Mm-hmm. And under the current language, it could fall out.
Mr. Chairman, we have not, revenue has not brought this as a concern yet, but it sure is something that we need to talk to them about and maybe clarify so that it doesn't become a future concern.
Representative Junkie,
just to that point, we do want to clarify, but we need to be extremely careful because that it's only a brand new Christmas tree farm or something like that, because frankly, if you've got Christmas tree farms or sod farms or anything else, you've probably had them for years and you are selling product off them, so you need to be very careful. Mm-hmm. Rarely do you see someone say, I'm going to go buy 100 acres and start a brand new Christmas tree farm, because there isn't income on it for 5 or 6 or 7 or 10 years, so they better be very well capitalized and have some big chunk of money backing them. So I think, number one, it's a rare occasion. If that is the case, we need to fix it, but we don't want to talk about averaging income over, because you can plant 1 acre of corn and, like you said, 1 acre of oak, and easily over an average of 7 or 10 or 50 years pay for this, and then you've got a big loophole again. So you got to be very careful when you draft this language. I'm sensitive to Christmas tree growers or timber people, and I do believe they're agriculture, but let's be very careful when we craft this. And again, the 1,000, this was pulled right out of the USDA federal regs on what qualifies for farms, and so we did hook it to something, and I don't know how, and our research may actually reference the federal statute to understand. I assume they're qualified as farmers federally too, and what is that qualification within that for Christmas trees and timber and other things, but we need to be very careful. I agree with what everyone's saying, but be careful, because I think it's a very rare occasion that someone would just open up a new Christmas tree farm and planting seeds or seedlings and growing them without having productive acres somewhere else on the farm that is producing something. You know, even the hybrid poplars up in your area, and mine, Representative Anderson, they're usually in conjunction with other farming operations on those parcels. They're not just starting fresh with hybrid poplars. They're probably growing soybeans or corn or alfalfa, something else on the farm too, which would be producing income. So I think it's a very rare thing that you would see only a Christmas tree farm starting from scratch.
In which case, if they are producing other types of agricultural products in the other lands, the tree acreage, even if it's not producing income, could still qualify in the 2B lands if it's not over 50%.
Coming off the whole farm.
Okay, sure. Representative Hansen, just a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Faust, what's the public purpose of your bill?
Representative Faust.
I would define the public purpose of my bill to preserve agricultural land, to have an incentive there for the landowners to keep it into ag production.
And Representative Lagunius.
Yes, I just wanted to clarify for folks that this bill is coming to Environment Finance, but only for an informational hearing, and we will not be taking amendments.
Thank you. And Representative Gardner.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Faust, I'm sort of interested in the interconnection between CREP and RIM and Green Acres. In the case of CREP Green Acres, I suspect we could go to any county with DNR or Bowser and have a list of all the acreage that's listed for specific conservation purposes. And I don't think we could do that with Green Acres. We'd know where the acreage is, I guess, enrolled, but that's really a revenue and an ag function. And we're kind of making this assumption that land is left alone will have some conservation benefit, but we don't really formalize it in the way we do with CREP or RIM. And I guess I'm curious if we can quantify the environmental benefit of the changes that you'd make in your bill. We're able to do that usually in some other fashion with other programs, but we're kind of cutting across several different disciplines here, and I'm just trying to figure out in my mind how we can know or estimate what some of the environmental benefits would be in some measurable fashion.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair, and that's a good question. And I think that it comes into the prevention of people draining sloughs, the prevention of people cutting down shelter belts, prevention of that type of thing from happening when there's a tax incentive for them to do so. And we want to take away that tax incentive for them to go out there and drain the slough. And like I said earlier, in my area, a slough will sell as hunting land for three times as much as farmland will. And so if there's that incentive, they've got to pay that much more taxes on a slough, then there's an incentive for them to drain that. And I think from an environmental standpoint, I don't think we want to do that.
Representative Gardner.
Well, just as a follow-up, Mr. Chair, as a suburban person who's, a shelter belt for me is a fence in my area, I'm sort of out of my element here, but I have 45 parcels in Green Acres in my district, and so this issue has been brought to my attention, but I hope going forward that you'll be able to find some way in which we can figure out how to describe that. I know everybody who owns land would say there's the shelter belt that has value, but for those of us who aren't living on the land, we would have a hard time sort of precisely thinking about it because a lot of us are in this box where we think of CREP or RIM with clearly delineated programs and all that. But I'm not asking a question, really. I just I would say as you talk to folks who are interested in the conservation side of it, we might figure out some way to explain it.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Let me go in a little bit more detail. Then, what a shelter belt is a row of trees, so that and especially in western Minnesota where the wind is blowing a lot more so than it is around where I'm from, where we've got trees, the wind, there's nothing for miles to stop it. And so farmers over the years have built rows of trees to slow down the wind, because the faster the wind blows, the more sediment it can carry with it, and the more dirt is hitting the house that it finally hits at the end of that 2 miles of wind. And so the more trees we, shelter belts that we have up in those types of areas, the less wind erosion we have on the land, and the less dirt ends up in the Mississippi River, and the less dirt ends up in the stream, whatever's closest to you. And as far as sloughs go, every time we drain a slough, it just increases the speed to the water from a snow melt or from a big rain. It just increases the speed that water gets into the bigger rivers, which causes more flooding and causes more sediment to go with it. And so from an environmental standpoint, that's what we're trying to accomplish by not draining sloughs and keeping shelter belts in place.
And the better. We have two other questions, and then we need to move on to the testifiers that are here as well. So, Representative Hackbarth.
Also, thank you, Mr. Chairman. And in regards to what Representative Lagunia said, I was thinking earlier that this bill was going to be referred to your committee, and I thought maybe I'd change the motion to move the taxes or wherever it has to go. But if
Representative Genius, you're going to give the hear, give the bill a hearing soon, I hope, because this didn't really have to get moving. I know there's two other bills, too, Mr. Chairman, that are moving, and I'm not sure where they're at in the process. So Representative Doty has a bill, and Representative Posh has a bill. I don't know if they're already in the tax committee or not, but I certainly want to get this process moving. We've got to get this thing going. So I don't even know if do we need to make a motion to send your committee Representative Genius, or can we just have a informational hearing on it without having the bill in your possession?
I have asked to have it sent to our committee, and I talked to the author and I talked to the chair, and we agreed to do that. I also said that we're not going to hold it up. We're really, it's an educational process because so many people have called this an environmental issue, and I think we need to discuss that.
And I don't deny that, Representative Genius. I think we do need to discuss it. I just want to get the process moving, so we have to get this bill done.
And
sooner the best.
And Representative Hackpipe, I believe Representative Doty's bill is in the Tax Committee.
Okay.
This time. So. Representative Joskowski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would just add maybe to Representative Gardner's question. I've got a question quickly for the author. In southeast Minnesota, the topographical realities make that a lot of your land is, you've got farmland on the upper, flatter part of the hills, and the most erosive parts of the land are in trees. And so the value that we really see self-evidently in our part of the state is if you don't have the eligibility for green acres for that tree land, that is also prime development land. So it will sell the very toe of that hillside, and who knows what with those trees in those very erosive areas. And that leads into what Representative Faust was saying. The erosivity on those hillsides are just unbelievable. But Representative Faust, my question to you goes back to the 4.1 to 4.19 section. And as I understand, in thinking about those types of properties that I tried to describe, I don't know if I did a very good job or not, but in southeast Minnesota we've got very much situations where I think this language says interspersed with productive agricultural land is pretty descriptive, where you'll have the valleys and the draws coming up full of wooded areas and very difficult. I can't see how the assessors could even begin to separate them. I just want to make sure that I understand correctly. So in those situations in our part of the state, and I know Mr. Hines and Ms. Baker were down there, that would be 2A land then? Is that correct? I mean, if you got a farm and it's a 40 and it's and that 40 happens to cut across a variety of those areas multiple times on the boundary area of that particular parcel, would all of that per 40 then be 2A land?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative, absolutely. If you look, like you say, on 4.12 to 4.20, it clearly says that interspersed in 2A land, that would be counted as that. Mr. Baker Ms. Baker and Mr. Hines also did some checking on a previous statement that I made that said that the CRP counts as the 2A land, and then I corrected that saying it was 2B, and now they've corrected and said no, it does count as 2A land. So even CRP counts as 2A land.
Okay, thank you for that correction.
Mr. Chairman, I'd like to mention one last thing, since I know that the committee, and that is on page 5, if you look at lines 5.13 to 5.17, I just wanted to point out that if you had land that, and let me give an example, and that is seasonal rec land, and if you could get it into one of these conservation programs, and I don't know the rules of how you can get into these programs and what it has to be prior to that, but if any of these programs allow the land to be put into the conservation programs that aren't ag, what this does is it says then it's not ag, if you look at that language, it says in the year prior to its enrollment, and the reason that the little I is there where it talks about 2002, that's because that was the year when this all came about as to should this crep and rim and everything land be considered ag, because some of this seasonal rec land was, they were trying to put that into ag, and there's a big classification and property tax difference if you have ag land versus seasonal rec land. And so that's why the reference to 2002 is there. But what I'm trying to make sure the committee realizes is that not all rim and crep land, if it wasn't classified as ag in the year prior to when it went into these programs, it would not be considered, nor could it be into green acres, because it has to be ag first before it can go into green acres. And that became a real issue, and the Revenue Department, I know, raised that as a concern, and the Tax Committee put that in because the idea was to have the rim and crep that was ag land, not all of the seasonal rec land. And like I say, there's a big difference in a property tax burden, and so I just want you to be aware of that, since I don't know the rules for how you get it into some of these conservation programs. I think some of them are more recreational than ag, as I understand. So,
okay, thank you, Ms. Baker, and we do have testifiers as well. One more question, Representative Anderson.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. And just for the sake of clarification, I think this bill does two things. One, it corrects some of the changes made to the changes made last year, but it also addresses what you called the Green Acres 2. So for the sake of clarification, is there, where does one end and one the other one start? Is there a page 1 and 2, for example, pertains to changes, and then 3, 4, and 5 to Green Acres 2? Is it divided neatly like that?
Okay. Section 1, Mr. Chair and Representative, Section 1 is about going forward, and Section 2 is about the grandfathering. And then Section 3.
That's the definition. That's
3 is the going forward.
So it's all about the Green Acres 2 except Section 2, which is the grandfather?
I believe that's right.
So, okay, thanks. And we do have testifiers. First, we have Fran Myron from the Washington County Farm Bureau. Ms. Chris Raddatz. Mr. Raddatz, welcome.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and Chris Raddatz, Public Policy Director for Farm Bureau. I'll kill two birds with one stone. I'm not Fran Myron or Tom Peterson, but I'm the one that got through the snowstorm. So we're here. We want to thank Representative Faust for bringing the bill forward and having some real thorough hearings. Chair Junkie and his committee, both Farm Bureau and Farmers Union support the Faust bill and the changes made that would be made to the Green Acres changes that were made last year. Both our organizations actually support repeal, but if repeal is not possible, then we'd like to see some of those issues addressed. And I'd like to just briefly touch on two real-life examples that I'm aware of that deal with the environmental issues that you're talking about. One is down in Winona County. The Winona County Farm Bureau president has the lands that Representative Drazkowski was talking about, where he has a side hill that he did farm for many years. I think he said it was about 8 acres, and he put it in contour strips. But over the course of time, the land just kept eroding off, so he placed the land in CRP, and it's in Green Acres now. Well, with the changes, if no changes are made, that land now will have to come out of Green Acres, and while the class rate's the same for 2A and 2B, his assessed value or taxable value is going to be higher, and he can't afford the taxes on that land. He wants to keep it out of production and in CRP, and the only way for them to do that, I think, is to keep the Green Acres treatment. So the Faust bill, the true grandfather, would address that situation. Fran Myron, the Washington County president from Hugo, has a situation where Representative Hackbarth was referring, He's actually going through a forced sale, forced condemnation with DNR. And again, because of the changes made last year, if that occurs and there's a title change, the way he understands it, then all of his non-agricultural land is no longer eligible for green acres. And in his situation, his farm market value of his land, I think, is about $7,000. The green acres value is about $3,500, so you can see a real difference in the property taxes that he pays. To complicate it even a little further, he's considering working with the NRCS to put in a buffer strip, to take some productive land and put it in a buffer strip. If he can keep the land in green acres and get some tax incentives, then that works for him. If he can't, it might not work. So there are some real environmental consequences to the change that were made last year. And with the House bill, especially I'm looking at the overview and the first bullet point that's important about the true grandfather, letting the land remain in so it doesn't have to come out, and then also allowing RIM and CRP to continue, and then to withdraw some of those properties. So both our organizations support these changes, and hopefully we can move the bill forward and again agree that hopefully something can happen sooner than later. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Raddatz. Any questions? Mr. Raddatz, Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Raddatz, from the Farm Bureau perspective, what is the purpose of Green Acres? The public purpose of Green Acres.
Mr. Raddatz.
I kind of had a feeling that was coming, Mr. Chairman and Representative Hansen. I guess I'd answer it this way, that the farmers who are using Green Acres see the purpose of the program as preserving ag land and open spaces. Now, that maybe wasn't the intent when it was first established, but they've seen a real value to this program. They've been able to preserve their ag land, preserve open spaces, put in conservation practices, and get a tax incentive for doing it. So, you know, we talk about unintended consequences, and I would submit to you with Green Acres, we've had some positive environmental unintended consequences with the legislation, and I think that's the struggle. How do you deal with the abuses and still keep those positive environmental benefits in place? And the farmers want to do it, but they have to be able to make it work economically, too.
Representative Hansen.
And then how do we protect the public investment? You know, if there's $35 million or $55 million of tax shift,
mm-hmm.
of a public taking from one property to help another,
mm-hmm.
and then that practice disappears and a strip mall is built on it, how do we protect that public investment that's occurred to protect either ag land or conservation land?
I don't have a good answer for that. Maybe that's something we need to discuss further as we look at Green Acres too. But I would submit that there is kind of a cultural shift among many farmers. A couple years ago, a young farmer probably in his 30s came in and we had a meeting on wetlands. And he said, you know, if my dad was even here hearing me talk about establishing a wetland, he would think I'm nuts. But my point is that farmers' attitudes have changed too, and they want to see they've seen the positive and the environmental benefits. A lot of them are thinking about passing their farm on to the next generation, and they want to keep those environmental benefits on the land. The situation I mentioned in Winona County, it doesn't make any sense to farm that land. He found that out after trying to do it for a number of years, that it was hard to do, and he was losing the soil and just didn't make any sense to do it. So I think some of it will occur because they want to do these practices, and if there's another way that it can be addressed somehow, we'd sure work with the author to see if that's possible.
Thank you. Any other questions? Thank you, Mr. Raddatz. We have next Mr. Bobby King. Welcome, Mr. King.
Thank you. My name is Bobby King. I'm representing the Land Stewardship Project. I had a handout I wanted to circulate. Thank you. We are in favor of a full repeal because of some concerns, and Representative Faust's bill does address some of those concerns. What I'm passing out now is a letter signed by 22 conservation and environmental organizations calling for a repeal of the changes made last year, with the acknowledgement that work still needs to be done, and that over the interim, that would be done with broad input. One reason we think a repeal is the best idea at this point is landowners are, number one, confused. This is a very complicated issue, as the questioning during this hearing has revealed. They're confused, and many, especially those who kind of had the rules changed, they feel like they had the rules changed in process, feel angry. So it's a bad combination of confusion and anger. I think resetting the clock will establish trust, and when changes are made, we can allow for a couple years for these changes to take place so landowners can understand the changes. And so many of these changes are built into estate plans and things like that that take some time to change. But I wanted to quickly talk about our main concerns and then the concerns that are addressed by Representative Faust's bill and some that may not be addressed. The biggest concern I'm hearing is the distinction between the productive and non-productive acreage, this concept that a farm would be divided that way. I think most farmers think of their farm as farmland. They've got tillable acres and they've got non-tillable acres. But the farm doesn't stop where the tractor can't go anymore, the cattle can't graze anymore. So that distinction isn't how we've actually encouraged farmers to think. We've been encouraged through our conservation programs to get farmers to think of their farm as a whole farm. And that language and that way of trying to assess the farm is, I think, problematic. The next concern we're hearing about is the CRP, RIM, CREP land, not being able to be in the program. Much of that land, especially the CRP land, had to be farmland to get in the program. Actually, someone in the Senate Ag Committee came in from Washington County, I believe, and was already, had gone through the paperwork of putting some land in the CRP, was told, once you get your land in the CRP, you won't be able to get the green acres tax credit, and he couldn't make it work. He didn't pencil out, so he didn't do it. So the changes are already having some negative environmental consequences. The last issue that we're hearing a lot about is there are cases where a transfer of land, not a sale, can trigger a payback on the newly created non-productive acres. So transferring the land from mother to daughter or father to daughter or whoever can transfer, can cause a payback to be created even though there's no money coming in. To me, looking over Representative Faust's bill, it looks like the full grandfather is a very good idea, we think, is putting with the land. Allowing the RIM and CRP land in is good. I think where there could be a problem, I think going forward, is trying to distinguish productive from unproductive or what's impractical to separate. In Winona County, you could have a farm on the ridge of 80 acres and 150 acres of woods going down the ridge. You could separate that, and then if you separated it and taxed it, that farmer would have to sell it for development, which I don't think would be the best use in terms of the environment and the community. The other issue is the issue of whether or not it has to be homesteaded. There's certainly situations where a farmer retires and moves to town and is renting their farm out while they're trying to figure out what to do with it, and it would no longer be homesteaded. So you also farm farms that aren't homesteaded. So those are my comments.
Okay, thank you, Mr. King. Okay, thank you, Mr. King. Representative Junkie.
Well, just to last say, I appreciate all you said, and you're right on everything, except realize no matter how we classify that intermingled land, it still is a matter. It can still qualify. If it's 100 acres of trees that's producing value, producing crop, it's just classified as 2B, but it means nothing as far as taxable value, because if it's eligible for green acres, that doesn't matter. This is really just defining how we do 2A. It has nothing to do with green acres or what's enrollable or not. That's spelled out in the homesteaded, the 50% clause, and all the other things in here. So just, I don't want you to confuse people, because that was asked earlier, and all that interspersed land would just be classified 2A, but would certainly be eligible for green acres.
Okay. Mr. King, you want to...
Let me just ask a quick question. So, an example I gave, it's not really interspersed, it's adjacent, but part of the farm. Do you think that would still qualify for green acres?
Mr. Chair, yes, it would, because, again, this is that the section you're referring to is only how we classify 2A. That would be classified as 2B, because it's adjacent and separable, but it could be signed up in green acres as part of a farm unit, as long as at least 50% of your acreage is in a farming operation. So it's only, you're only talking about how we classify, not what's eligible for green acres.
And in that example, Mr. King, the wooded acreage was more than 50%, well, which is common in Wyoming.
In that case, you just wouldn't put all of it in, but you could still put in up to 50% of that to be landed.
Right. Which could be problematic in an area like Winona County.
But again, now you're talking about a conservation program and not a Green Acres agriculture program. If you're simply preserving wooded acres, whether it's northern Minnesota or southern Minnesota, that's not producing anything, that you're not harvesting for timber, that you're not doing, that's only there for recreational or open space purposes, that isn't Green Acres. And let's not confuse that. This is a program set up for ag, and you heard it from the last two people, for ag preservation. And if you're, Representative Eakin's right and everyone's right, but what you're talking about is a different program, which Representative Kalin introduced and others that talk about maybe we should do this type of a program for conservation. That is a good discussion to have, and we might want to do that. But that 100 acres, if you're putting in 100 acres of woods and 5 acres of tillable, you don't qualify for green acres. That was one of the abuses we're trying to get away from, if it's not producing anything.
Mr. Chair, Representative Duffy, going forward, you wouldn't qualify, because my understanding in Winona County, there are many examples
that's
like
correct.
That. And that's how people think of their farm, though, I think. There might be a little disagreement here, is that my farm is 50 acres of tillable, and I've got 90 acres of woods there. And unless there's some type of way for a tax deduction on that wood, they're going to have to sell it for development, I think. That'd be the concern. And there may be other ways to address it.
And I do know that well, it was just stated that the conservation acres, the CRP acres, they do count as 2A lands. I don't know if that's one option of possibly enrolling some of those lands into conservation programs that would make them eligible for the green acres. Would that be correct, Representative Faust? If you put land into the 2B land into CRP or conservation programs like that, because you were saying that the CRP is eligible as 2A land.
2A land, that's correct. And the reason for that is that it was productive land when it went into CRP, and so why should it not be considered productive land now?
Okay. So you couldn't put those acres in, then there wouldn't be any rim acres would not be included in that? Or What about rim acres, Representative Faust? Would that be classified as 2A lands? Because some rim acreage probably wasn't productive lands before that went into the program. Would that be correct?
It would have to have been agriculture land before it was put into rim.
Okay.
It's the same with the CRP. It had to be ag land when it was put into CRP.
Okay.
Yeah. And you also have to have that $1,000 where it's part of a bigger farm that has $1,000 or something.
Okay.
And just an FYI, there is forest preservation programs in the state now, too. I know that for a fact. There are programs that the DNR administers for forest preservation, too, that land would all likelihood be eligible for, if that's all you're doing for it is preserving forest land.
Thank you. Any other questions? Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I think we could follow up on this last discussion maybe in the next committee. But, Mr. King, what's the public purpose of the Green Acres program?
Mr. King.
Yeah, the way our members have expressed it to me is to preserve farmland and to allow them to continue to be able to farm without being taxed off their farm. And I think their concept of farmland is definitely much broader than just the tillable acres, and it includes the wetlands, the buffer strips, and often a large wooded tract that's contiguous to the farm. Is how people have described it to me, is what they think it is.
Okay.
Our members.
Representative Thiessen.
Okay.
Any other questions? Representative Duskowski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Faust, the part that is still a question mark with me is this determination of 4.17 through 4.19 and the determination of interspersed and whether or not it's practical for the property to be sold separately. Now, Representative Junkie brought up and said 5 acres of farmland and 50 or 90 or whatever the acreage was of wooded land. I think you could have situations where that would fall in the $1,000 category to fit Representative Junkie. I think our biggest problem down the road is going to be to have clarity around the decisions in the current language that's there. I see that as potentially problematic.
Well, yes,
Mr. Chair. Yes, Representative Junkie.
Just to be clear, this isn't tax committee, and that's where this debate will really happen, but it's only for classification purposes. It's not for Green Acres purposes at all. And that's what's confusing. We're trying to address the confusion between 2A and 2B that the assessors are having, which really has nothing to do with Green Acres, but we just did it because we're good people over in agriculture, and we thought we'd do that for them. But it really has nothing to do with Green Acres. And that interdispersed, is everything you're talking about as long as it's in between the fields. You know, you can't possibly separate that for sale without disrupting your other lands, putting in roads, getting to it. You don't have access to it even to sell it off. So, and it's really just to classify the two. It's classified as 2A then, which is a good thing because you don't want that classified as 2B. So it's a good thing that they classified as 2A ag production land, even though it might be wetland or a piece of woods or a sinkhole in your area or whatever. They couldn't classify that as vacant land then. It has to stay in the 2A, and that's what this is saying. So we think it's good, and it's part of that farm unit. But it has nothing to do with Green Acres. It just has to do with that classification to kind of give the assessor some clarity, too.
Okay. And we do have two other testifiers left yet. Any other questions at all? Okay, next we do have Mr. Vance Granis, Jr. And sorry if I mispronounced your name.
No,
but if you got it? Okay, good.
Thank you,
state your name for the record, Dad.
My name is Vance Granis, Jr. I am a resident of Invergrove Heights, Minnesota. I will try and keep my comments as best I can related to the conservation aspect of what you're looking at. However, as you've seen from all the questions and comments so far, we keep getting back into some ag areas. But what I think is important to understand, and I've seen this from some of your questions, is that we all approach this differently based on our background. So that the term Green Acres Agriculture to one person means the large fields of grain or sugar beets or potatoes or hay, while to another, when you say that, they think of a livestock farm or with hogs, cattle, or a dairy farm. Some think of it as their poultry farm, and others think of a vegetable or organic farm. Similarly, the terms conservation and habitat to some mean the northern forest, to others it is the prairie potholes, while others think of the wooded bluffs that we've heard about along the Mississippi. In fastening a fix, which everyone seems to agree is needed, to the problems that were created by the 2008 amendments to the Green Acres Law, the legislature must craft a remedy that works for Winona County and Clearwater County, for Anoka and Stern, and for Dakota, as well as Hennepin County, for dairy farms, sugar beet farms, and organic farms. Last year, the legislature, based on the auditor's report, removed so-called unproductive land from the Green Acres Law because the auditor's report incorrectly said that the original Green Acres Law was not intended to include unproductive land.
And Mr. Granis, we do have your testimony, excuse me, that's written here. I was wondering if you could maybe just hit the high points, and that would leave time for our last testifier as well.
I can do that for you, thank you.
Appreciate that, thank you.
I think the next point that's coming there, I think, is important. I believe I am the only person in this room who was involved in the writing of the original Green Acres Law. So I think I have some understanding of what it was. And to answer the question, of course, what was the purpose, or what is the purpose, it is my understanding from being there, the purpose was to prevent the high taxes from causing urban sprawl by the forced sale of this land for development. Yes, that was to permit the farmers to stay on and have agriculture. But I don't know that the purpose was that we want to keep X number of acres of agriculture. It was to let people stay on their land, farm it if that's what they wanted to. And in farming it, they thought, as you've heard from Mr. King, their farm is the entire farm. It includes the other acres that are so-called unproductive. But those unproductive acres, even though they aren't generating an income maybe, are important to conservation in that they are generating the carbon sequestering qualities of the woods and the fields. They're making the water retention facilities and things like that. The importance, I think, and Representative Junkie has brought it up, we've got two different things here. We've got agriculture, we've got conservation. And you'll see, if you go through the comments, that I'm not going to read all of them now, there is a bill by Representative Atkins and Senator Metzen, which tries to provide for the same type of benefits for conservation land as were and are in the Green Acres Law. Now, for 40 years, this conservation land was being protected by the Green Acres Law. And as Senator Chaudhry said in the hearing last week in the Senate, it doesn't make any difference whether that was the original purpose or not. If for 40 years we've had a good public policy of doing it, we ought to find a way to continue it. So that's my concern. Regarding Representative Faust's bill, I talked with him prior to the meeting. The basic ideas that he has said he wants in it, I agree with. I agree with Mr. King's comments. What I explained to him, and we'll talk afterwards, I'm sure, is I think the, although he's called it the two grandfather clause, and it's certainly much more so than the one that was in last year's bill, I think there is a possibility it can be interpreted not to grandfather in non-homesteaded land. And it was his intention to do that if it was in Green Acres before, and so I think we can get that worked out. The other issue is on the term interspersed that some of you have been discussing. In the prior law, they used the term contiguous. I think that would be a better word, because then you don't get into the issue that Mr. King brought up about what if this land isn't really interspersed, it's along the side. And what happens is, if that land can't be included and there's a forced sale of it, it not only interferes with that land, but it may very well interfere with all of the agricultural land, because you might have to build roads through the agricultural land to get there to develop it. The non-homestead issue is one that I think needs to be addressed, because there is a lot of land, at least in Dakota County, and I'm not sure about the other counties, but there's a lot of land that is farmed by full-time farmers with agriculture land, but it is non-homestead. They bought up land separate from their homestead that is not homesteaded, and that should be allowed to continue. And I think there are ways that it can be worded to take care of the hunting problem that's been discussed without having to get into saying that the land must be homesteaded. Last point I wanted to bring up is something that can pass those is, how do I do that? Okay. When you're considering conservation lands that need to be protected, most people think of this outstate land, but that isn't necessarily the case. Right here in the metropolitan area, there is land that I've just shown you in the pictures that's in Integral Heights, Minnesota, that we would like to be able to protect and preserve. And if the, I guess this is what is called that unproductive wasteland, but it has very great environmental habitat area, and that should be protected. If we can't do it under Green Acres, then I would encourage you, and I hope that House File 99 will get here at some point and be able to consider protecting it in that way. But one way or the other, since it's been protected for 40 years, it should continue to be protected until you get some other law. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Granis. Any questions from Mr. Granis? Okay, seeing none, thank you very much. And we have one more person. Mr. Vanasek.
Good evening, Mr. Welcome. Chair and committee members. I normally pass being hours late, but Green Acres has kind of gotten a lot of attention this year, and figure I better get a couple comments in. As some of you know, I wear a few hats around here. Today I'm representing here on behalf of the Minnesota Association of Assessing Officers and pinch hitting due to the snowstorm. But I had a group of 75 township officers in a couple weeks ago, many of you visited with them, and brought up, we talked at length about Green Acres, and Green Acres is a program that gives one taxpayer a preferential tax treatment at the expense of another. In some time, I had folks raise their hand. How many of you do not have Green Acres, your land enrolled in Green Acres? Maybe half the folks raised their hand, and they said, "Well, you guys are paying for the rest of the folks in the room." To benefit, their taxes are lower because yours are higher. That leads me into, the Minnesota Association of Assessing Officers do find problems with the Green Acres way of doing things. And in general, we oppose the setting up of preferential treatment via deferments or limitations on their valuations and so on. And we do support folks going to the Ag Preservation Program, Conservation Easements, Sustainable Forest Program, where there's it's efficiently administered and you don't get all these inconsistencies across the state, which we've seen with the Green Acres program. A couple of years ago, the auditor, the Department of Revenue, farmers, eventually the Office of Legislative Auditor came forward to identify quite a few problems with the Green Acres program. We have a very diverse state from north to south, east to west, and we really support Representative Paul's bill because it keeps in place some of the changes made to the Green Acres program to fix it. And we don't, if we go back to a repeal, not all counties were allowing RIM and CREP in. Things aren't consistent across the state. I'll try and leave a lot of the comments for tax committee, but MAAO really supports aspects of Representative Salt's bill that allow RIM and CREP land to stay in the program or if they weren't already allowed in, to be in. We also really support a grandfather clause, but don't think that the way Representative Falk's bill does this is appropriate by giving it to the land instead of the owner. You could have this grandfathered land, which basically gets the permanent treatment, some corporation, some developer to come in, buy it, sit on it for a while, and then with a preferential tax treatment, and then, you know, eventually at the expense of everybody else in that jurisdiction, and then eventually put a big box store on it. The bill does go a little bit broader than the Green Acres program and changes to the 2008 law. Section 3 of the bill, it broadens the definition of agricultural products, including commercial boarding of horses, trees sold for timber, lumber, wood, etc. If you have if someone owns some land, maybe they have a second house or a hobby farm or a cabin, if you, folks might think, well, I'm going to get away from that high tax rate you find there and maybe put a couple horses on that land and call it commercial boarding without any, we're deleting the requirements that cultivating or raising of agriculture products exist in addition to the boarding of horses. You're going to incentivize a lot of horses, little barns to pop up around lakes up north and, hobby farms in the metro area and so on. I've got more, but I'll leave it at that for tonight, and thanks to the committee for its time. Next question.
Mr. Vanosik, that's kind of junkie.
Well, a number of things. First for the horses, and we do want to address that and make sure it's clear, but again, you still have to be on 10 acres. So it's not like you can put up a horse barn, on your one-acre lot and somehow claim Green Acres. You still need to have 10 acres, and in all likelihood, that means there's pasture there and other productive land that would be along with that. So I don't think it's going to be quite the issue you might think in the assessing realm, but certainly something we should be cognizant of and sensitive to, because a lot of, I know, my Twin Cities folks here and metro folks have those horse boarding operations that are usually connected to land, and I think it's fair that if it's a, same with nurseries. Nurseries are included in Green Acres, too, as a specialty thing. But again, in agriculture, and usually connected with some open lands that are utilized, but they're not homesteaded, and that's why we had to spell them out separately because of their status. Secondly, as I mentioned, Representative Drazkowski, but I'll mention the committee, one of the big problems with all this is the assessors. With all respect to Mr. Vanosik, who represents them, honestly, our Department of Revenue needs to sit down and get a handle on assessments in this state. And I do real estate appraisals. Every county is different. Every single county I go into does it a little different, and it's based on that local assessor and what he thinks he should do. They might assess tillable land as tillable ABC. They might use CER values, crop equivalency rating values, to do their assessment. Every county is different. And that our revenue department and us as a legislature haven't really gotten a handle on that or been afraid to do it because they're a pretty independent group, as he knows he represents them. But really, that's some of the problem is the assessors and the way they're interpreting some of this, and everyone's doing it differently, and there's really no guidance from the state on how to do it. And And then lastly, I just want to take a poke at Representative Gardner, because he said, boy, I don't really care about this Green Acres. Doesn't mean much to me. I only have 45 parcels. That's way, I'm paraphrasing, but that's way more than I have, Representative Gardner. So you have a lot more. And I want to remind people that 33 counties in the state don't even have Green Acres. Mm-hmm. They don't know what you're talking about. But all you metro and suburban and outer suburban areas do, and Falk and Beacon in my district, is very little, if any, in some of our counties. Because, again, the only reason you have tillable is if you're, or Green Acres, if your tillable land is worth less than your woods and wet and non-productive acres. And in most of the state where you grow sugar beets and potatoes and corn and soybeans, the tillable is worth a lot more than any of your CRP or your woodlots or anything else, because that's your productive acres growing 200 bushel corn. So 33 counties really don't even know what you're all talking about. So it's a very important issue, but I just want to poke at you a little bit. You have way more Green Acres than I do. So
come on out.
You're in the country.
Representative Hansen. Mr. Chair, Mr. Vinosik, I'm not going to ask you the other question. I'm going to ask you if you're representing assessors. So are there, representing the assessors, are there acres enrolled in Green Acres that they're miles away from any development? If the purpose is to prevent sprawl, are they ever going to be developed, or are they just getting a tax break?
Mr.
Vinosik.
Mr. Chair and Representative Hansen, that's a large reason why you do not see Green Acres being implemented in 35 counties. You know, the Stearns County, which I believe has the highest number of parcels in the state, that 3,600 plus, you know, they only started doing Green Acres in 2001 due to the developments around all that lake country area. So agriculture was feeling the squeeze in quite a few counties around the state. You do not have these development pressures, and doing a Green Acres program, you might get the farmer might see, you know, tax advantage of perhaps $10 a year, and you know, the cost to administer that is, you know, adds up a lot more than the, you know, cost benefit. And if I may, to represent Junkie's point on assessor inconsistencies, absolutely. Assessors are employees of their county boards. Some county boards have said, you know, have adopted resolutions, we're not going to do Green Acres. And in different parts of the state, you have up north wetland sloughs, you know, sandy soils. In the southeast, there's not a lick of standing water. The land is all like this. You have ravines and so on. And it's easy to say, well, you know, come on, we can, you know, assessors will know whether it's a horse boarding facility or not. But, you know, it's the landowners that come, and they all have a different view of what their land is used for and what that farm unit, whatever it is, you know, is to them. And the assessors get put in a position to make judgment calls, and the 2008 changes made it more consistent and gave more guidance to assessors across the state for the benefit of standardization uniformity. So that's why we don't support the repeal bill.
And Representative Faust, do you have a comment you wanted to make?
Yeah, I'd like to respond to Representative Hansen's comments, too, that, you know, in my area, it isn't necessarily development that is forcing the values up. It's hunting land. You know, I've got people that, you know, they might have 40 acres of good farmland, good for my area. It doesn't grow 200 bushels of corn like it does in Junkie's area. But you know, if they let it go up to trees, it'd be worth three times as much. And I don't think we want, you know, in the long run, we don't want that to happen. So development isn't the only reason for land to be Green Acres.
Okay. And Representative Anderson.
Thanks. Just a quick comment on the assessing thing. In my opinion, we have one of the most complicated property tax assessment systems in the country, and this added one more classification last year that's 2A and 2B, so it's not an easy thing in some cases, and
A lot of assessors think it's way too complicated, and I tend to agree sometimes.
Okay, thank you. And I agree that we do have a complicated system, but I know one of the reasons these complications arises because we're trying to establish a fairer system too. That and I think that that's you know, that I know Representative Hansen, you're asking the question about what was the purpose of the Green Acres, and I agree that preservation of farmland was one of them, but I also think that the issue of tax fairness is an issue here as well, and not just taxing land at its best possible use, but as it is being used. And obviously there are a number of areas where farmers won't be able to hold on to the land if they're going to be assessed at the value that they could be assessed at based on the highest possible use. So anyway, are there any other questions for Representative Saylor?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, I just have one final crucial comment, and I was just the representative of 2B is asking the representative of 2A if this is clearly understood in 2A and 2B.
It is, and I do want to mention that the 2A, which I represent, that's where all the productive land is. It does, yes. Any other questions? So, Representative Faust, any final comments before?
I guess I'd just add one little bit to what you just said, Mr. Chair, is that the value of the land to the person that owns it is usually not being pushed up because of anything of in their control. One of my cousins is farming land that's been in the family for well over 100 years now. And if somebody came in and bought up the land around him and we're going to build a shopping mall, it's not his fault that all of a sudden his land is worth 3 or 4 or 10 or 100 times as much. He wants to continue to farm that land, and I think that he should have the right to do that. And that's what the Green Acres Bill is trying to do.
Okay. Thank you, Representative Faust. And with that, I will renew the motion that House File 217 be recommended to pass and referred to the Committee on Finance with recommendation to go to Environment Finance. All those in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All opposed?
No.
Motion prevails. Bill is passed. Thank you, Representative Faust, and meeting is adjourned.